Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts on this final episode of Season 4. This is one of those topics I've been promising for two seasons, which is to essentially go after the fraud that is Albert Einstein. I will say that in my research of this, it is so egregious and so... how do I even describe this? The motherfucker stole so much shit from so many other people, from so many folks, and never credited them, never referenced them in any of his material. And therefore is proof that there is some cabal behind this guy, because if you think it's tough to publish a scientific paper today, it was even tougher back then in most cases, in that if I said that I had completely rethrown the books of physics, and I had no references in my papers, they wouldn't read the paper. They just throw it out and say, dude, you didn't invent everything that is the substance of your conversation. You are standing on the shoulders of giants, and at least have the courtesy to note where you're starting from. What's your framework here? Because you're going to advance existing theories. Einstein was, from all of the research that I've done, and what's crazy is if you, it's like you approach a horrible scene, whether it be a murder scene where it's like the Overlook Hotel where those little girls are all chopped up in the hallway. No matter how you approach Einstein, one angle, his history as a student, the papers that he claimed to have discovered these things from, the comments that he made, his loyalty to communism and Zionism, and which is a banking institution, not necessarily race, okay? The guy is just dripping in scum. The fact that he beat his first wife, the fact that he married his first cousin, he probably used his initial wife to do a lot of the mathematics for him. He would, the second he moved out of being an abject moron at a fucking patent office, and as they decided they were going to move this being their Peter Sellers character up in the eyes of the people, which has got to be what that movie's about. Now I look at it, it's like Peter Sellers is playing an Einstein-type character. This was an archetype of things that the ruling class of the world have done several times, and so they made this joke. And, you know, at the end, it's got a Hollywood ending to it. But our guy isn't who they have told us he is our entire life. But now, when I research this, and we're going to go through some of the evidence, the problem with the evidence is that it's so plentiful. And unless you seriously get off on hearing about theories of, you know, how theories evolve in science, and understanding exactly where Einstein steps in, plagiarizes everyone else's stuff, doesn't give any credit out, and then is a scumbag in the end and goes, hey, everybody does it. It's like, no, Einstein, nobody does this. Everyone cites everyone else's stuff. But there are reasons why he didn't cite things. Most importantly, he didn't understand them, and he wanted to be famous, essentially. But he was used just as much as he used anybody else. So he had this, you know how this works. You know, you look at Tom Arnold, and you're like, how the fuck did that guy ever get famous? Oh yeah, he, for a second, marries Roseanne Barr. She's completely talented, has her own show, and then Tom leaps off her back and pretend like it's something he would have had he not married her. Einstein's one of those guys. He's just a little slime ball who's in the right place at the right time to do these things wrong, and then never corrects towards the end. The dude was born in 1879, dies in 1955. As a child, you know, unfortunately for those who want to hold up the myth of this man, We're going to go into some of the critics of this argument. In fact, I'll get that out next here. But as a child, he was tested over and over and over again. And there's usually two sides of the brain that are going to be proficient. One of the two will be proficient within a child in school. Very rarely do you get both, where someone's a painter and a computer programmer. For Einstein, he was failing in both hemispheres of knowledge. It was as if he had learning disabilities completely. He was horrible at math. Every time he was assigned something to do something creative, he failed that as well. But supposedly, this guy is like some autist that's just waiting for the right problem to come about. But what ends up happening is he keeps trying to get into these institutions where I guess he can feel smart. He wants to be in an engineering school. And this is where you sort of get into the absolute fundamentals of the fact that this guy is a complete fraud. And you really don't need to go much further than just his adolescence and his appointment to the patent clerk job. Because then we're going to draw some contrasts with the gentleman that actually came up with everything that he stole. And then again, I'm just going to repeat this 100 times in this episode, that he didn't reference. So he stole things and he didn't reference the fact that he stole them. It's okay to borrow other people's theories and say, hey man, I got all the way up to here with Tesla stuff and then I reinterpret it and there's time travel. Perfectly fine. But give credit where credit's due so people understand where your genius starts and where it ends. Einstein is so ignorant as a human being that he has a problem getting jobs to support his family. And so he has a buddy of his that gets him a job at a patent office as a patent clerk. Now, there are different levels of patent clerks. And it is based on one's capability to understand what is being presented and requested to be patented. So he's what's called a third tier patent clerk, or a level 3, I think is what it was, which level 1's the highest and level 3 is damn near the very bottom. So he's reviewing, can openers and garbage can lids, and he's doing very basic stuff in the patent office. He is not assigned to interpret these gigantic theoretical physics frontier barrier Lorentz Poincare, whatever his name is, the French guy. Poincare. But somehow, when he's there and working, and here's the rub. Here's where it gets like, if him being completely failing out of school isn't enough for you, on both the creative and the logical side, I mean, at some point, something's got to click, man. I was, I aced both sides of my brain. I spent a tremendous amount of time in this, and I'm still not anywhere close to these geniuses that Einstein plagiarized, and then he claimed he was beyond them. That's what's just so funny. But here he is, a third-rate patent officer. I mean, God bless patent officers. We need them, and we need people that do the can openers and stuff. But this is his absolute apex of his brain. This is as much as he can accomplish in the world without stealing. Somehow he gets a hold of other people's papers in this more advanced area. His wife is a mathematical prodigy, Maleva, his first wife, the one he beats up. And there's all kinds of speculation about her contributing greatly to translating these advanced ideas into ideas that he can understand to then sort of brutally repeat. But by 1905, he's releasing a paper that is so out of his fucking wheelhouse, it's unbelievable. And just so happens to mirror the last few years of submissions into the advanced patent area of the office of which he worked. Now, what's interesting is this is where it gets just fucking hilarious, man. This is where you can't really deny that this is a complete fraud. The individuals that came up with these theories prior to him, the Poincares, the Lorentz, the Plancks, and this is where it gets tough because there's like dozens and dozens of these people and they live all around the world and they came in at different times. You know, Isaac Newton knew about energy and mass being convertible by 1704 and lamented about it. But there's like another six people after Newton at various years before Einstein's even born talking about the fact that energy and mass convert and had essentially written the very first E equals MC squared formula. Had theorized that the faster that mass goes towards the speed of light, the more inertia from the universe is present and therefore nothing can reach the speed of light. Now, I think that's complete bunk bullshit, but you have to respect the fact that the way that they came up with it gave him that idea, and then we're going to find the right method because we found the wrong method. But these gentlemen who came up with this, who are Frenchmen, a gigantic chunk of them are German, and of course there's the war that's going to end up happening here. 1905, we're not in that yet. But 1905, we are literally 8 years from the beginning of the World War I, where the entire, all of Europe is going after Deutschland, Germany. But the people who discovered all of this stuff had laboratories to be able to conduct experiments to have an opinion. And here's Einstein, living literally in borderline poverty as a third-rate patent officer with no laboratory whatsoever, has never been in one of these laboratories, coming up and saying, without reference, he has come up with special relativity. That's the first wave. And he is, the only thing they ever credit the guy with is that he took other people's ideas and he, which were relativity-based, and he put the word special on the front. So, hey, we'll give him that credit. General relativity doesn't get documented until 1915. But 1913, he had tried to publish it, but he was using Grossman's mathematics, which didn't work out. So a lot of the stuff was wrong. And we're going to explain all this to the best of my ability. But he republished it with two other mathematicians. Who knows if, Mileva had anything to do with it. He would have been married to Mileva for another 4 years. So he marries his first wife in 1903 and divorces her by 1919. And it was just a tumultuous marriage. You know, he was beating her up when he would see her. Then she wants a divorce. As a policy of granting the divorce, you know, he has her sign a contract saying, you know, you will not come into the room when I'm in the room. You won't talk to me. You won't touch me. It's just a total prick. Just a weird, I mean, and I guess that I don't worry about the fact that he's nuts in that realm. But then he marries his cousin, 1919. He was already banging his cousin. And so then he switches over to her. The weird thing is she looks like him when she gets older. And she dies in 1936. But now let's back up just 1 second. Instead of going into all the specifics of the papers and losing about, 80% of you folks, why would this be occurring? Because Einstein's only one guy, and one guy lying about stealing other people's science, or stealing other people's, discoveries, I should say, isn't going to turn him into the, 1999 Time Magazine Man of the Century. Hitler was number 3. That's how prestigious that list is. It's really interesting to think about because some of this isn't documented and some of it is. Once you create a superhero in anything, a celebrity superhero, a scientific superhero, you then have a platform to then attach other things to. Now, let's just say Einstein was somehow able to pull out of his butt all the things that he was unable to prove when in an academic environment to prove that he had these capabilities. Again, I don't really care if he fails mathematics, and then when he was creative, the teachers are like, but this kid failed mathematics, but when it came to creativity, oh my gosh, he blew everybody away, and da-da-da-da-da. Nope. He was explicitly documented as being below average in all areas of academia. Every single sector that they could test this kid, he failed miserably. Some people thought he was mentally impaired. Maybe he's just a late bloomer. Seriously. But when they pump this guy up, then what happens is external forces gain power. What do I mean? Well, a lot of us at Lehman, we think, oh, they build up George Clooney. Therefore, George Clooney personally has more power. Not really. They could build up a George Clooney, and I'm just picking on him because he's there. But they could actually have him say things on their behalf. They could feed him information. And I don't know this gentleman. He could be a genius. I don't know. But let's just say a celebrity. They could feed the celebrity, hey, you should say this, you should say that. Then they run out, they get a Senate hearing, they do something else, and now they are actually believing in their soul that they're living for the agenda of themselves, but they're actually carrying their controller's agenda forward. And here's the interesting thing. How do we figure out what is some? How do we map the dopamine in our brain? How do we do it with monkeys in an experiment? Put them in a box, there's a little lever, you push it, a pellet comes out, and they eat it. And then we can make the lever mechanism a little bit more complex, and they got to figure this out, toot, 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 boom, and they get a pellet. Well, as soon as they're eating the pellet of food that tastes good, that doing this action in front of them is the thing that they want to do. Hitler was probably manipulated by the banking cartel because there was a fairly well-documented controller that was in his camp. Again, the History Channel said, you know, they rebranded it as a psychic that he believed in mystical shit to make him seem like he's retarded, but he's not. He went and had that guy taken in the woods and murdered because he found out he was an insider for the banks, which made him double down against the bankers. But if someone told you to be here and do this, and you do it, even if you're resistant towards the first time, but then there's a great turnout. You get in the press. You make some money. You're like, oh, man, that was great. Let's do that again. Yeah, you know, we need you to be here, here, and here. We got a whole tour for you. Okay, and every single time you show up, you gain more power, you gain more money. Oh my God, you'd be drunk on the hubris. All right. So as Einstein successfully somehow got his papers published and adopted, and what you have to understand is that most of the literature being written about this guy around the 1905 paper release for the next several years was that they said no one was paying attention to this guy because they thought they knew he was a complete fraud. They're like, look, you don't even cite references. 99.9% of your paperwork is other people's work with your little 1% sort of, you know, moronity on top of it. When I first heard about the Mormon Church, you know, anything against the Mormon Church, but the first time I heard about Joseph Smith coming out and saying he found these gold plates up in upstate New York and he was inventing this Book of Mormon thing, the press at the time and the people talking about this movement, watching the Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ Church get created by this guy, were like, he's just a charlatan. He's inventing this thing out of nothing. He's written a really bad version of the King James version of his story. So this Book of Mormon, you know, it's about these families having it out the whole time. It's really, you know, to drag out some examples of life. And hey, there's a lot of metaphor and good stuff in there, whatever. You don't think it's true to enjoy its true moral upticks at times, right? But they said the guy's a fraud. And then later out, you know, later the Chicago publisher found out that he had stolen the book when he was in jail at 17. But everyone ignored the guy. And then what ends up happening, we get this gigantic church, Christian church, which is the Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ, right? All right. But then I thought, okay, because I came in this having the traditional knowledge of what Einstein was supposed to have done. And there was the, you know, the big Eddington experiment where Einstein couldn't get to this location where there was going to be an eclipse of the sun. And Einstein invented this idea that, hey, the light should bend around the sun because of the way that general relativity and special relativity work. And when I actually first read it in middle school, which I call junior high, I read a whole dramatic thing that Eddington didn't like Einstein, that Eddington had his own theories that were supposed to happen, that he was actually going to prove Einstein wrong, and that when it happened, it came in that Einstein was right. And it's completely the opposite. Eddington loved Einstein. Eddington and his crew went out, and unfortunately, during the eclipse, it was really cloudy. And so there was this, March 29th, 1919. I'm using reference here. But they said that they were taking the photographs and developing the photographs right there. And the way the history books have it is that only Eddington and another guy looked at the photographs. And then Eddington phoned it in and said, it's true. Einstein's totally right. And the other dude's like, I didn't see that. So the whole eclipse thing might be a complete fraud set in place by Eddington. But the big fraud is that it was already theorized a long time before Einstein was ever born, that this effect might occur. Now, I'm pretty sure it actually occurs, because it should. The photonic wave of ethereal matter should splash around the sun's ethereal dielectric field, and it should warp. It should go all the way around to a certain extent. A little bit of a lens effect. You know, and Newton was the first dude to theorize that light might move around like a lens from other bodies in space. And if you doubt, you know, Einstein's problems as a child, but you like things like Encyclopedia Britannica as an official source of truth, here's what the Encyclopedia Britannica had to say about Einstein's academic prowess as a child. They said that he showed little scholastic ability, and specifically a lack of imagination and practical ability. In 1895, Einstein failed a simple entrance exam to an engineering school in Zurich. And in 1900, he was still unable to get into the engineering school. That's the Encyclopedia Britannica itemizing his education as a child. But of course, some people jump on that and say, oh my God, well, that's why he's so amazing, that he couldn't get through school, but he was this absolute genius. And, you know, that happens all the time, right? Usually people, because I live in a surf community, so I do have amazing people that have created surfboard companies, apparel companies that I've met. And they, again, they would have serious problems in school as well, but they would always excel at something. They would excel at art. They would excel at video, you know, shooting video and putting things together. They had a knack for physicality, where they were able to, you know, make a surfboard from scratch. That's engineering. That's a hand-eye coordination thing. That's really understanding the science of surfing a wave. Einstein had nothing that seemed to catch anyone's eye. Here's another little note that might be interesting to you. So Einstein had a full-time job. He was an aide at a local college where he helped work in a laboratory. And in his spare time, he writes 4 groundbreaking papers. Okay. He writes a paper that discussed the foundation of the photon theory of light, the equivalence of energy and mass, the explanation of the Browning motion in liquids, and special theory of relativity. All while working, you know, 2 or 3 jobs, and has a family, has a wife, and he's just hitting it out of the park, boy. Just, he's Babe Ruth in the scientific community. Here's the thing. We know geniuses that are truly geniuses. People like Isaac Newton, who by the age of 19 had invented calculus out of thin air. This guy was a powerhouse. Newton was a powerhouse of invention and discovery. Leonardo da Vinci from Venice, right? He was a powerhouse, creating all kinds of stuff, perfecting painting techniques, theorizing flying machines where man could wear an outfit, man could get in a helicopter. These dudes are powerhouses, and they constantly create because they can't stop. A lot of you are like this. But Einstein can't do anything unless he's got a team of people behind him feeding it to him. And the only thing he does is he narcissistically takes full credit for everything and then says, it reminds me of that fucking band Coldplay. Coldplay's first big hit was stealing a song from Kraftwerk. When asked, hey, you stole the, I think it's Computer World, is a song they stole. I mean, it is exactly that song. There's all kinds of mashups online. When asked in an interview, hey, how come you didn't credit Kraftwerk in your album even though you stole their song? One of the members goes, I don't know why we have to credit some dumb German band for our song. Wow. A Gen Xer giving birth to the genetics of an entitled millennial. And that's how it goes. And as long as there's a bunch of people that don't understand music, there's going to be a lot of people that want to jump on board. With Einstein, his genius was only in the history books when the press started pumping him up as a genius. And again, back in the 1900s, you have scientists cranking out inventions and patents. Tesla's on fucking fire. Even Edison was doing great. It was so intense that when, you know, Tesla was inventing the basis of wireless technology, there's another guy in Europe whose name escapes me, I apologize, but he was also doing it. The world was on fire with technology. The guy from Coral Castle. Just the break of the 20th century, he goes down to Florida and starts lifting rocks like they did in the pyramids. He writes a paper on magnetism and says, you've all been lied to. At the center of an atom is a photon, which, on this show, is a verb, not a noun. James Maxwell, in 1878, 1 year before Einstein was born, had come up with the theory that light had a fixed speed. Now, we now think that light doesn't have a fixed speed, but Einstein took credit for that as his reinterpretation of E equals MC squared, which again has a mile of scientists behind it. But Einstein gets this Nobel Prize for the photoelectric effect, and it has been suggested that his public appearances and his discussions of his own Nobel Prize lacked the one deciding factor of what really makes the photoelectric effect occur, which is that it's based on the frequency of light hitting a conductive steel and making this thing happen. But a guy named Wilhelm Wien and Max Planck, I'm saying the other dude's name wrong, of course, maybe Wien, they were credited with actually pioneering everything up to the crowning point, and then, of course, in comes fucking Einstein as this deus ex machina guy in science that goes, oh, that's my idea, you know? It's, you know what, I just figured this out. Here's your perfect analogy of Einstein. Perfect. How many of you saw Indiana Jones 1? Opening scene, first act. What's Indiana Jones doing? He is down inside this wild tropical, looks like South American, you know, catacomb inside a mountain. He's got his assistants with him, and he's going in to get that little statue, that gold statue. And of course, he's got the bag of sand in his hand, and he's got to swap the weight. And he swaps the weight, and it sinks because he miscalculated it. And now he's like, oh crap, got to get out of here because the doors are going to start shutting, and I'm going to die in this place. So he starts hauling ass out the door. This is the famous rock scene, the round rock that chases him out of the cave. He just jumps out of the door at the last second. Some dudes, I think, have died in there. And there's this British guy who grabs the gold from him And he says, "Once again, Dr. Jones, what was yours is now mine." The guy followed around Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones is your Max Planck. He's your Lorenzo. He's your Newton. He's an inventor. He is the genius that figures the whole map out and finds the treasure. And this scumbag at the end takes it from him. And will obviously take it into the normal world. And say, "Look what I discovered." And instead of that being stored in a museum so everybody could see it and history can be furthered in its reconstruction, that guy who stole it is going to use it for his own fame and money. Sell it to the highest bidder. Sits in someone's house. No one has a chance to look at it. Now, the other thing that started to occur for Einstein was a really lucky thing for a guy that was a scumbag like him. He had scientists that trusted him, Hilbert being one of them. These scientists would send him papers. I mean, this is like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. Exact situation. Steve Jobs goes to the Xerox PARC building and is shown the GUI, the mouse, and the laser writer. And they're saying, "Look, dude, our company won't fund this. They don't see the vision of it." And Steve goes, "All right, I do. It needs a lot of help. I got to really fix this thing. I think folders should be able to be inside folders. I think there should be something called a scroll bar. Your fonts are too hard to read. Let's, you know," Steve Jobs polished this thing like crazy. But he saw it. He credited it. He paid for it. Created what was going to be the Mac OS, which is essentially, I think, ProDOS was the first version of it. That, you know, ended up on the Apple IIc, ended up in the Lisa, and I believe even the Apple III. But he trusts Bill Gates, and because he's like, "Bill, you've got this office suite. We need that functionality on my computer, my new Macintosh." So in 1993, I think towards the beginning of the year, he brings in Bill Gates and his entourage and says, "There, I need your stuff to work on this. I'm going to give you the libraries, give you machines. You move it over there." And what's Bill Gates do? Well, he moves the office suite on there. But the problem is he starts Windows on the side to rip it off. And he ain't going to pay for it at all. But now, what else did Bill Gates rip off that he gets credit for with all the morons of the world? "Well, Bill Gates invented DOS, man. MS-DOS. He's a fucking genius." Okay. Look closer. Look closer, my good friends. DOS was invented by IBM, and it was kind of brutal to navigate around an operating system. And so in the 70s, a bunch of folks had figured out, and this is what I've heard several times, they added about 23 commands to DOS to make it usable. Bill Gates takes the 23 commands, bundles it up. It's what we call stealing. Doesn't credit anybody, doesn't cut anyone in on their royalties, and re-releases it as MS-DOS, Microsoft DOS. Man, it must be nice. Must be nice. It's like finding the Mona Lisa, doing a brutal copy of it, or maybe even a good copy of it, destroying the original and releasing yours as the genius that it is, without crediting it. These people exist all over the place, but usually they're not tremendously famous. But what else starts happening with Einstein as he starts to amass this sort of, you know, he's getting real fame based on faux papers that he stole from other people, again, not crediting anyone. He starts to get into, like, political conversations with folks. And usually, you know, there's so many different scientists that would write about physics and mathematics and philosophy and that sort of thing, because they're deep thinkers. They think about these things. Well, Einstein starts advancing agendas of damn near pro-communism. Definitely pro-Israel, but you can understand, you know, with his heritage, why he would do that. He was a member of the League of Nations. And there's a little fact that some of you may not know, but, you know, when Israel was formed, they wanted Albert Einstein to be the president of Israel when it first started, which I think would have been very interesting. But it would have truly exposed him as a fraud if he didn't truly have the intellect that he claimed to have. Now, luckily for him, he turned it down. That could have been a very revealing effect, and he would have only been president, I guess a maximum, maybe 7 years before he died. There's, you know, this falsality that of course, he invented E equals MC squared, which is absolutely one of the most bold-faced lies ever to be told in scientific history. I mean, that is just bullshit. The one theory that he stole that had the most documentation of predecessors, from this Lorentz, Poincaré, I mean, all the way back to Newton, was the E equals MC squared theory. Now, a little bit of this has been sorted out in recent history, at least in my observations, but I grew up being told that Einstein played a huge role in creating the atomic bomb, partially because he submitted, out of thin air, this ingenious theory that mass and energy are interswappable. My God. You know, you're talking about 200 plus years before he submits his rendition of it. It had already been theorized and then mulched and taken into all kinds of considerable effects. Anything that he said was special had already been written down before. Lately, they've re-clarified history, let's just say. Who the fuck knows what's true anymore, right? That he just wrote a letter. He was coaxed into writing a letter saying that they should use the atomic bomb, or they should develop the atomic bomb, the Manhattan Project, in order to stop this incredible war that was going on in Europe. But the inside knowledge is that everybody that worked on the bomb, the real bomb, said that Einstein was so illiterate in science that he would have been of absolutely no help to the construction of the bomb and the development of the bomb. How could that be? How could that be that the guy that wrote the paper on it, invented the theory of it, wouldn't be a absolute primary contributor to its invention? Especially after writing a letter saying you should make it. Now, of course, they said later on after the bombs were dropped, he regretted ever writing the letter. I hope that part's true. So yeah, he becomes a member of the League of Nations in 1922. That by 1923, he's starting to really sympathize with the communist view of the world. And, you know, everyone can get duped before you get to see a method of governance fail. So we didn't have the Cold War in his time frame. He didn't get to see potentially some of the suffering as a result of communism. So I can cut a guy some slack and go, you didn't understand what the hell you're talking about. And maybe you're just looking at it on paper. And again, socialism might work on paper. Marxism might work on paper. But once you introduce the human element of greed and war and what have you, the frailties and inequality of man's education, this stuff just can't work. Because every part within a political system has to operate perfectly to keep what's on paper working perfectly. And it never ever turns out that way. And there's a few points in history. They're fairly meticulous, but he did, because a lot of people said, well, how could he not be a genius if he hung out with genius people and they didn't just figure him out and say, you're a fraud? Well, let me tell you a little story. There are a lot of people in this world. And I think the technicality is we're all either guilty of this through being mistaken as to what we say. And some people are absolutely devious about this, which is, I have met some folks in Hollywood that claim to have done things in their entirety, meaning that thing was invented, that thing was conceived, and I thought it all up. I engineered it. I designed it. I designed every pixel on that thing, every single curve and twist on it. And later you find out that they merely led the group of geniuses that pulled it off. So some people prop up their careers like that. And what's interesting is I will be at parties with these individuals, and I know the truth about them. And I'm not here to piss on people's parades necessarily, but Einstein is got a big problem that he is introduced by erasing science that's true, mostly Tesla's work, which we'll get into briefly. And you've heard me say it 1,000 times, so I'm going to go fairly fast over this. But I've been at parties where people walk up to those geniuses, and the thing that they don't say, and this just isn't done, is, well, you said you did all that. Well, tell me all about it. Tell me all about how you designed this or did this or constructed that or thought this up. Did you really work with, did you really work by yourself, or did you have people that work for you? No one ever validates any of the genius. They just want to be around important people. And they don't question it. Because one, if you have this problem in the social dialogue of the situation, in that you're going up and calling someone a liar, essentially, if you start delving into their claims. And if they truly are the genius that you suspect they might be, or even that you might suspect they're lying about, if they're truly the genius, then you will have blown your opportunity to be with other smart people, because that guy will go, let's just say the guy was a real genius, someone in Hollywood or whatever, and you go up and kind of passively, aggressively attack their record, and they look at you and they go, yeah, I did it all, motherfucker, and fuck you, get away from me. Who invited this asshole? Get him out of here, and you lose your pass. So the idea that he hung out with smart people and doesn't validate anything, trust me, man, I've been to plenty of events where people who lie about their careers do this. Now, a lot of times, being in the video game business myself, I know how this works. For years, you know, when I made all my money from the gaming industry, at times, people would ask me, you know, what do you do for a living? And I say, well, I work at Electronic Arts. I work for an Activision spinoff company, da-da-da-da-da. And immediately in their brain, I'm doing everything. I'm designing the best game in the world. If they own Madden Football, they think I'm working in Tiburon, Florida, contributing to the Madden game. I didn't. I've never been to Tiburon, Florida. I don't even know if I've met the guys that work in Tiburon. I've met the Orr brothers who invented the franchise when it was 2D top-down pixel in 89. I was best friends with one of the guys. But I don't have anything to do with that. But someone could misunderstand what I'm saying. Repeat that to somebody else. Oh, that guy's a genius, man. He's doing all this crazy stuff. And whatever I'm getting an accolade for, which I am unaware of, is wrong. And so someone could come up to me and say, well, you know, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. I'm like, yeah, who the hell said I did? You know. But for Einstein, it was different. If Einstein was good at anything, it was showboating at all the things that he said that he invented, again, without reference to anyone else, which is a serious violation of scientific research. And one of the giant criticisms against Einstein was, here he is, a guy working in the patent office, where if anyone were to submit even a toothbrush patent without some sort of reference to previous toothbrush patents, they won't grant the patent, because they're like, you're not giving us the full history of this invention. There may be other people that need to be cut in on this invention. They're part owners, because you're stepping on their shoulders. Now, in Newton's time, it's a little bit different. Newton was famous for saying that, you know, Newton gave credit with a sort of an analogal statement saying, I hope that's a word, but he said, I stood on the shoulders of giants to get here. So, yeah, I don't know, you know, he didn't have a computer and a database and a publishing outfit to do it. So he had the University of Cambridge, which had a big library, and so he's working from that. But this dude was like off the chain brilliant, all by himself. But after he got his 1915 special relativity paper out, or excuse me, general relativity paper out, excuse me, he started getting recognized, and they started putting him in educational institutions with students underneath him. And then, of course, communication outlets with other scientists around the world. And so, again, this is where he would get papers from someone else 2 weeks before that guy plans on releasing his paper, and then Einstein would quickly go, boom, I release first, it's mine. It's like Dillinger in Tron. Dillinger stole the games from Kevin Flynn, Ed Dillinger Sr., and he releases the games as his own, and the whole premise of the film is that Kevin Flynn wants to go inside the computer, find the original files that credit him for creating all these arcade games that he's got in his local arcade in Santa Monica. But the only money he makes is the money that goes through the machines and not the actual royalty from the machine itself. So some, doing my research on this, I read a lot of web pages, I watched a lot of videos. I've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years now. Because I was shocked. And some of the places that I studied, you know, they're going off on a sort of a anti-Semitic angle for all this information. And what's interesting about it is the places that I bumped into, which actually have, you know, some decent information and references outside of their own bias, but they're very Christian-based web pages. They will use, you know, so in their eyes, it's all Jewish press controlled everything. And so everywhere where there was a Jewish-owned paper, Einstein was always super-duper pumped up. All right. It's a tough one to know whether or not that is exactly the angle that was actually occurring. You know, what's interesting about the whole anti-Semitic thing is you have, again, it's a tough subject because you have Jewish people that are, again, according to my Jewish buddies, who are exceptionally brilliant people. You know, they're saying, look, 80% of my family in Israel and the neighborhoods around it, we don't go to the synagogues at all. We're atheists. So we hate getting this Jew blanket on us because we're like, look, we're Jewish blood. We're normal people. We participate in society. We kick ass and take names just like anybody else in the world in a first world country. And we got to hear this, you're a Jew thing. And he goes, within Israel, this is my closest buddy. He said, you know, it's the bankers, the Zionist movement, which involves all kinds of different races, that is really what's making us look bad in the world. And so this gets to my personal sort of hunch when you see how Tesla was stomped out for Einstein's preferable, hey, let's not pay attention to anything that actually controls the world. Let's not pay attention to the dude that gave us the theories for free energy. Let's not pay attention to that guy. Let's pay attention to the guy that makes us look over here and worry about things that don't matter. Whether or not a star bends around, you know, starlight bends around the sun, which again is Newton's theory. There is pretty convincing evidence, okay, and I'm just going to cite this because you can go look this one up. I will not link this down below. But as my friend, let me just actually touch on it this way, because my friend made a pretty good argument for this. I don't really say argument, but he just gave me some historical information. He said, look, he said, up until the formation of the country of Israel, he goes, the Jews were all over the world with a very developed religion, if you were truly practicing Judaism. But we didn't have a country. We didn't have a place to be. It's sort of like the way the Kurds are today. And so there was this push at one point to finally find a place that they could call their own. Now, one might disagree with the way that Israel was created because it was the kind of restitution for the World War II and what the Nazis did to the Jews in Germany. A lot of people think, look, why not give them Germany? Don't give them Israel, because Israel was sort of 50-50 Arab-Jew and everybody was getting along. But as they moved in and were basically granted by the world, you can have this land, they obviously want to move all the Arabs out, which are the Palestinians, and create this whole place that's pure Jew. All right, that little thing has taken place. Palestinians are almost completely gone out of Israel. Separate argument, separate video, not touching that with the 10-foot pole. So some people link the sort of the false ratification of Einstein's genius to fueling this notion. And I've heard even, I think Mel Brooks, I saw say it in an interview, but I've also heard other folks say it in many panels of scientific review, where you will have a Jewish person say to the audience, we produce the most brilliant people in the world. Look, we got Einstein. Now, saying that you're a superior race is racism at its finest, isn't it? I'm not able to say on this show, I think German engineering is unmatched in the world. Even though I love Italian cars better than I love any German car in the world. I wouldn't say that because that's something I can't validate personally. It would just be this sort of racial pride or something that I might have, right? I have found geniuses of all left brain, right brain, in every race that's out there. And so, I mean, I guess there's a few races I don't really have any interaction with. You know, I don't know where the geniuses are in the Aborigine times. They're saying now that that's one of the oldest civilizations in the world. I don't have a lot of knowledge about pure Africans, the black Africans. I just don't. But I'm sure they're in there. I'm sure there's some mind-blowing inventors and creative artists. And so I just assume they're there. I just assume humanity has that in every corner of every race. There's this weird article that I believe was first published. There's a video of this, and it's bizarre. It's this article that was published starting around 1915, and it kept getting republished up to about 1938. And this dude in this video has all the old papers, and they're all, you know, they've kind of gone the way of acidity. You know, they're starting to turn yellow and stuff. But he's filming the pages, and he's turning this page, and it's an article that says that 6 million Jews in Europe are being persecuted, and they need to raise money to stop this persecution. But it keeps getting republished and republished. In 1938, it's like the last time it was ever published, and then, I guess, 7 years later, we have this huge massacre that happens as a result of the Nazis with 6.2 million Jews. Don't know. It's a weird little thing that I guess occurred. I'll let people with a lot more knowledge than me study such a thing. But there are accusations that, you know, the building up of Einstein was sort of to build a foundation and awareness of the Jewish culture and what have you. It's hard for me to weigh in on that. I mean, it's just, I wasn't there. I think one would have to live through those decades from perhaps 1915, clear up to 45, to know anything about it. And then you have to be meticulously paying attention to such a thing. What I think is really strange is there's so many races out there, if not all of them, but I think actually I'm safe in saying not all of them. But every time a race were to get up in the past, because now we're more of a melting pot kind of world, which is nice, we've all done individually bad things. America's, you know, wiped out the Native Americans. All the European slave owners, slave drivers bought the slaves over here. And then as they relocated over to run plantations in the Democratic South, you have slave drivers. We have the forefathers of America. We have the Nazi movement. We have what Stalin did to his own people, what Mao Zedong did to his people, Pol Pot. I mean, it just goes on and on. There's always been some tyrannical dude doing some crazy shit in the world. So what matters today, 2019, in this story of Einstein? What matters to me is that we had reached an unbelievable sweet spot by 1917 when Tesla, who had just come back from his expedition, that's what I call it, to Springfield, Colorado, I believe that's the name of the place, where he conducted, which I think is where John Denver spent a lot of time. But this is where Tesla had refined his Tesla coil to put a little bit of amperage down into the Earth's crust and siphon out of the bowels of the Earth infinite plasma energy. And when he found that, he was like, look, I have found a foundry of infinite electricity. Now, here's what's interesting. Based on that theory, you just have to build the building that he had in Colorado Springs, instead of building nuclear power plants, instead of building coal-burning plants, geothermal plants. You don't need any of that crap. You just build what he built in Springfield, Colorado. I don't know if the schematics exist. And you could just siphon it all out of the bowels of the earth and transmit it to everyone's house. Sure, there's a little bit of unit charge only because we have to pay for the wires. We have to pay for the building. But then Tesla came in after that and said, I have mastered at the same exact time wireless technology, and unlike anybody I've ever heard, he wirelessly could transmit as much power as you needed to your house. According to him, it was going to cause no interference with the human form. Now, he may have been wrong about that, but he believed He had a safe method of doing it, because he was around electricity constantly. And apparently he was hit by a car trying to walk to his local cathedral slash library or what have you, and broke a few ribs. And it makes you wonder, right? But he refused to see doctors, so they weren't quite sure what actually killed him, but he died in his hotel room in room 3327. And that's when, John G. Trump, who was known at MIT for being this electrical whiz, came in to seize all of his paperwork. It's just phenomenal, man, how the world works. But so Tesla had figured out this ecosystem where we'd have to stop paying for electricity. Again, I think that's why Tesla so easily gave up his patent for alternating current, because he's like, yeah, go ahead and take alternating current. In the end, I think Tesla understood that being the richest man in the cemetery wasn't very fruitful. He didn't have any children, so who was he going to leave any of his money to? If he spent every single dime, he wins, which is sort of what happened. He died penniless. Penniless in the terms of true monetary measurement, but he was a baller when it came to brain cells. But here's where I say the thing I've said 1,000 times in other videos, and that's probably not an exaggeration. All the predecessors to Einstein had figured out that the fabric of the universe was one simple particle called the ethereal particle. Faraday to Tesla, these guys had measured the speed of an ethereal particle at 50 times the speed of light. And this would be a fundamental particle to all things. So if someone's like, hey man, you know, that can't happen because nothing, because E equals MC squared and blah, blah, blah. It's like, you might want to cease saying that. But ethereal particle is what makes the fabric of the verbal reaction of a photon. A photon is an isolated ripple in space-time. That's what it is. Time only being a measurement of, where is the ripple now? Where is the ripple now? Where is the ripple now? That's the way we talk about time on this show. If there was any, because Einstein just threw out ether, and they come up with some ridiculous experiments, and I mean utterly, fundamentally misunderstood what ether is. But since no one understands it at all, when he said it didn't exist, you just have people going, oh, okay, I didn't know what it was in the first place. You say it doesn't exist, man, and the paper says you're really brilliant. Well, then we're good. But because of that one problem, and again, this is all coming back now. People are starting to understand this really is the way the universe works. Cosmologists have reinvented the universe in electrical patterns, and then it'll just be a matter of time before they take Eric Dollard's journey back to the predecessors of all discovery and find out that what they are tracking, the electrical properties of all things, is based off of the ethereal particle collisions in the universe. Is it okay that Einstein stole all this stuff? I say no. Because what it ends up doing is you end up hanging out with, I'm trying to think if there's any movie that did this. Imagine you just have a person that comes up and says, oh, I'm a brilliant survivalist. I know how to exist in deserts and jungles and forests and in the water. I know all the ways to stay healthy and avoid the predators and to find food everywhere and da-da-da. And you're like, okay, great. And then you go on this expedition with the person, and all they've done is read comic books and watch television survival shows. And the second that things go real, you're both dead. You're both being eaten alive by some grizzly bear. Your face is being consumed, or a monkey is chomping on you. That's exactly what I think has taken place with the scientific community. What's interesting about today's science, and by the way, there was an article today on the front page of, I think, Fox News that said, scientists do now think that a black hole can dissipate. It evaporates in space. Oh, how convenient. The thing that can't exist now evaporates. Oh, cool. But you don't find them because they evaporate. Okay. Genius. The dismissal of ether reversed the entire theory of gravity. It's a push, not a pull. It is a pull in only the relative terms of negative pressure, which is the same exact theory of a jet wing. I'm sitting here right now and I watch commercial flights fly in front of my face going to Long Beach Airport. Those big giant buildings in space, in close proximity space, sea level, are being held up there with 200 plus passengers by negative pressure. It's the way the wing cuts the air, which is fluid, that makes this negative pressure. And that is the methodology of how ether creates attraction in space. This was well understood, and it was just so plain and obvious that they just moved past it. It wasn't a controversy. Gravity wasn't a phenomenon until Einstein showed up. It was fully explained by everybody before Einstein. Now it's a phenomenon. Oh, okay. What's really funny, and you know, I've made an episode about this already, which hasn't aired, is that people will come in from the flat Earth side of things and say, gravity doesn't exist, it's all air pressure. And I'm thinking, well, that is the exact theory of ether. It's the exact theory. It's just not air, it's not water, it's ether. It's the subatomic thing that air and water are made from. So we're all on the same page here, guys. You just have to take your brain down to the level of an ether particle, and then all of a sudden everything makes sense. You want to understand how ether works? Sit and stare at a river. Stare at a river hitting rocks. Stare at a river hitting the pylons of a bridge. Just sit and stare. Fill up your sink with water and pull the plug and watch the whirlpool happen. You will understand how ether works in the universe. It is the same exact laws of collision and ricocheting that make that happen. It's like you know, but you don't know you know. Sitting up there arguing with people and losing friends and getting banned from people because you're up there calling people names. It's like, I'm not sure you're going to get the IQ award this year. But now let's take it one step further before we finish up the episode. A lot of us are concerned that information is going to be controlled by, and it's already happening on Google, it's already happening on YouTube, it's happening on Facebook. The censorship is off the chain, right? And then they're trying to rebrand truth as lies. When I post a video about us not actually going to the moon, they post this Encyclopedia Britannica article below saying we did go to the moon. So in our video, we have more truth than lies. Below the video, you've got pure lie. I talk about reptilians. They post the reptilian article underneath. I still can't get over that one. Why does it matter that Einstein wasn't who he said he was? Now, just before I go on to finish that point, I'm willing to bet that by the mere dedication to the lie, Einstein most likely died in 1955, being probably one of the world's authorities on everything that he had stolen. Because how can you not know? I mean, didn't Bill Gates really understand Windows when he resigned from Microsoft? Sure. He stole it from Steve Jobs, who bought it off Xerox PARC. And so you do learn. You do, when you have to repeat a lie over and over and over again, you do get good at the information, and you may actually end up deducing something new. Who knows? I don't have any proof that Einstein invented or discovered anything. Not a single thing. He was just an expert at taking credit. And a lot of scientists are not Hollywood-type people. They're not people, right? They're sort of introverts who, you know, they don't get up and give speeches very well. They might write a paper really well. But the people that he stole things from had, you know, some of them had written 50 books and 500 papers. I mean, these people were ingenious, and they had a whole history. They had the academic past as a child and as a young adult and finally an adult to prove that they had this machine in their head to come up with these things. And then their paperwork cited previous scientists, because that is what is required to have your paper considered in the scientific community. But if we as a society are more interested in developing fake heroes than truly giving credit to those who actually come up with the ideas, then the problem is that we will continue this process until the point where all the quote-unquote authorities of the world know nothing. When I was a kid, someone told me, I don't remember how old I was, probably in my 20s. I'm a fair fan because of Indian food, of Bollywood. I love their old movies. I love eating food and watching, you know. My local joint I go to plays this one channel. It must be streaming off the internet or what have you, but it has videos and movies from like the 50s and 60s and all the way up to like modern day, you know, dance-offs. And it's just fascinating. I think these people are just enchanting people. But when I heard in my 20s that the people of India started making these celebrities off these shows, politicians. We do it in America all the time, right? It was an Al Green, a senator. Ronald Reagan was a governor and a president. And so we have started this celebrity worship at a point where, are we really picking the best academics to control what is purely an academic form of solution? You know, we may not want to put let's just say, the world's best economists in our countries, in our respective countries. You may not want them to be necessarily the president, because they may be, you know, inadvertently sociopaths that can't really communicate with other world leaders, but at least we bring them in and say, okay, we're going to give you this whatever room, kind of room you want. You want a palatial suite, you want a little tiny laboratory, whatever you need, we're going to give you everything that you need, but we need you to re-engineer our economy. Other people are good at all things. They're good at understanding things. They're established business people. And they run countries really well. Does that mean they're perfect? No. But at least we have the best chance by boiling up the best men and women that we have in our countries to these prominent positions. But in the case of Einstein, Einstein probably should have cited his resources and said, I've got a little teeny tiny change to the previous theory that is what I've come up with that I think reinterprets this a little more accurately, which is what a lot of people say he did. The faux pas of his actions was that he lived his entire life never clarifying anything. And whenever challenged about it, you know, I mean, he would say it didn't matter. But again, when they said, you know, I guess the most redeeming thing that Einstein is rumored to have said that does take a little bit of the sting out of what I now believe to be his history, which is still extremely blurry, let's just be honest. We may never know. If any of you are truly interested in all of the who did what before him, just go research it, because the list is exhaustive. I mean, it takes a little while. I was trying to come up with a really good chronological episode of all of the things that he had plagiarized, and it was so unbelievably deep. I would just be reading you facts for probably a couple hours without making this interesting at all. But he was rumored to have said, when asked, what's it like to be the smartest man in the world? He said, I don't know. Why don't you go ask Tesla? Something to that effect. If that is truly something he said, it sort of warms my heart a little bit about his Peter Sellers being their character. If you don't know what I'm talking about when I say that, Peter Sellers is an actor, and there's a movie called Being There, where Peter Sellers seemingly was an idiot, and he was propped up by a bunch of people to be a genius and to be... Well, that's all you really need to know. He was a genius. But there was a Hollywood twist at the end of the film, which you just need to see. I won't ruin it for you. It really beckons a movie, doesn't it? You could write a couple different films about this. You could write a film that is the true devious interpretation of all this, where, you know, he is scheming with his wife, his first wife, and he is just hungry for the fame. He's hungry for it all because he grew up being pretty much certified as not that smart and absolutely not creative at all in his thinking process. And then, well, wow, if you can get the accolade for being exactly the opposite of what you are, when that's what you always wanted to be in the first place, there's a motive there. So you could do a sort of devious interpretation of everything, all the little meetings, all the little papers that he wrote, books that he released or what have you, speeches that he gave, who might have been feeding him with that information. But you could write another film which could portray him as an innocent guy that's being manipulated by everyone to say, just say it, just say it. Don't worry about that. Just say it, just say it. And he's always fighting for the legitimate process of, well, we need to write down the references. And the other people are going, fuck that, just do it, just do it. It'd be very interesting how one could write both sides of that fence. What I wish he had done is be the sort of mouthpiece for science and say, look, my knack, being Einstein, would be to interpret very complex things so that the layman can understand it. This is something that supposedly Steinmetz, the mathematician, did. He tried to take what was almost impossible for the human mind to conceive of at one time, and he boiled down and essentially the theory of algebra for simplification. He took a lot of super complex theories and used a huge, like 25-man team of the most brilliant mathematicians, Steinmetz being certifiably OG brilliant, and boiled it all down with an objective to literally make it easy. Sort of what the GUI did to DOS operating system programs, to give you a unified interface where you're like, okay, at least you can rely on the fact there's a file edit menu, and then the rest of it will be custom to the product. It's nice. So now let's think about it. Let's say you go back in time and you approach Einstein in 1904. You pull him aside in Zurich and you say, okay, dude, here's the deal. You bring back like an iPhone with you or something so you can prove that you're from the future. You sit down in front of him, you say, look at that device right there. Go ahead and play with it. Play yourself some Bejeweled for a few seconds so you can understand that I'm from the future and I'm here to kind of keep you from making a giant mistake with your career, because you're going to live really high on the hog between now and the day you die, which I'm not going to tell you when you die, but you will have built your entire empire on a lie that less than 100 years later is going to get exposed, and you're going to go from an icon of genius to an absolute definition of a fraud. And you say, look, here's what, we know that you're scheming to start stealing shit. You're not going to cite any references. We know that you're you're working as a third level patent clerk. You're an assistant at this university. And we know you don't have the academia to come up with this, but you're going to lie. And there's just going to be this force around you, propping you up and pushing you up there. But I'm going to give you an opportunity to either do it right or not do it at all. In one path of the choose-your-own-adventure, Einstein decides, yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't want to be a tool. I will make amends with my wife that I beat. And maybe you tell him that too. And I'm just going to have more kids, and I'm going to enjoy my life. And you kind of whisper to him, you might want to go to America in 1921. Get out of here, because it's going to get bad. But whatever, he doesn't become Einstein at all. No one ever finds out this guy exists. He never releases any paperwork. But in the second option of the Choose Your Own Adventure, the third being what actually took place, he decides to cite his references and be very meticulous about what his contributions are. Every time he uses a mathematician, he gives credit. And so he becomes a legitimate contributor to the scientific community. He becomes sort of a Guy Kiyosaki, I think is the guy's name. They helped Apple get funding and helped Apple get the publicity it needed to make it through the 80s. Guy never lied about what he did, ever. And so he's celebrated as a cornerstone of Apple's genesis. I think I got his name right. Because it's so muddy, we really don't know where Einstein starts and where everyone else begins in an absolute fashion. We do know a lot of theories that obviously existed before him, stuff that his friends mailed him that then he eventually immediately took credit for before they were able to release their papers, making them look like second-rate plagiarists themselves of Einstein. What a hilarious joke on history that was. But let's say he took that first path and he just didn't become Einstein at all, never contributed. What would have happened to the scientific community? Would a lot of us that got into this stuff because we thought he was real, would there have been someone else to take his place? Would they have been legitimate, or would they have been a fraud like him? And so it really kind of comes down to a bit of the moon mission theory. If we didn't go, but we said we did, and we haven't been able to do it for 50 years afterwards, again, the only scientific breakthrough we've never been able to repeat, now that science is like a million times further in Moore's Law than we were in 1969, we pulled it out the first time, supposedly. We know for a fact, I can just say it from my own personal experience, believing that we had gone to the moon as a child was very inspirational to me. And it wasn't that I sat around fantasizing about going to the moon. I'm not sure how many times I ever really thought about that would be neat because it was already done. I definitely thought about it. But just that science was this amazing frontier to devote your life to research. It didn't matter what realm of science it was, whether it would be chemistry or aerospace or whatever, cosmology in general, physics, quantum physics, Newtonian physics, the Lorentz Poincare, I don't know how to say that guy's name, special relativity and general relativity theories. These are important things for us to know. We think there's some validity to these theories. Maybe everything's deprecated 100 years from now. Who knows? Would Tesla have taken the spot of Einstein? Well, probably not, because of the commercial threat that Tesla posed to the energy industry, giving away something that could be construed and repurposed as a high-demand product, which is electricity, is then fought by those that are going to profit by it. Anyone coming up with a theory that says that you don't need to pay for it, at least at the exorbitant rates we do pay for it, there's motive there to destroy Tesla. So he probably wouldn't have been the guy. These folks that trusted Einstein by sending them their research prior to him stealing it, just like Ed Dillinger and Tron, would they have been the new Einsteins? We don't know. What we do know is the effect of the myth of Einstein, which is probably what I'm going to end up calling this episode. There are countless books, papers, probably a few television episodes, definitely documentaries all over YouTube about the power of the myth of a hero. Have you ever had anyone walk up to you and you're sort of lost in your life? Maybe not a big loss, you know, you're okay, you're comfortable, but you're just like, man, I'm not really thrilled with my life. And then they tell you a story about what you could be, the heroic version of yourself. And they look at your true qualities. They don't blow smoke up your hole. They basically say, look, you've been able to do all of this. And even though that is a very specific thing that you've already conquered, let's pay attention to the arc of who you are as a person, your overall capabilities as a human being. It looks like you're an amazing human being. And if you're able to accomplish A over here, I'm willing to bet you could go B through Z in your entire life. And because you have a limited lifespan, like all human beings, you probably won't get to Z, but you'll have a blast trying to get to Z. And they portray the heroic version of yourself, and then you have this epiphany of like, oh my God, all I needed was someone to tell me that I could. The whole genius behind, so heroes, whether they be mythical or real, do have value. And what's also interesting is that sometimes the human mind needs things in neat little packages, right? For whatever reason, man needed to come up with a theory with the beginning of the universe to answer that question. And again, once upon a time there was nothing and then it exploded. You know, that's the Big Bang Theory, which never happened. But it certainly made a lot of people feel comfortable who may have postulated that enigma in their brain, and they went, oh God, finally, these really smart people, of which I have no means of validating whether or not they are smart or not, have told me this story. Hey, it kind of makes sense, you know, and then they feel better. All right. Einstein was, if anything, a package around a bunch of science that other people had come up with, but it was in a neat package. If you go and research the dozens of scientists that actually came up with most of the theories that he plagiarized and said were his complete conception. Again, when you give no references, you are saying that you thought of everything that you're discussing. There's that old saying, there's no original ideas. He certainly is portrayed to us as that mythical being that he came up with everything. No one had any idea of special relativity before Einstein. No one had any idea of general relativity before Einstein. The photoelectric effect was stalled until he came around. Untrue to the power of three, okay? But if we were to try to communicate all those other scientists, it would get messy in the brain. It was messy for me to come up with the bare amount of research to be able to turn on the camera for this episode. I'm a little angsty that I am not mentioning dozens of names and their years of publishing their papers and all this other stuff, but it'll just get boring. So they're in closing, it's just one of these things where it's sort of like, well, man is a very imperfect creature so far. We allow these sort of blasphemous plagiarists to become certifiable authorities in things, and this is all over all things, not just Einstein. And maybe because the public is only finding this out now, I'd say in the 21st century, it's really started to blow up that this guy wasn't who they said he was, that this is perhaps the best we could do with the intellect that we had. Anytime you hear someone say, well, if that was true, it would have been on the press, would have been in the press. And then all of us truthers just throw up a little bit in our soul and just go, oh my God, you really believe that that's true? You really believe a profit, private for profit organization cares whether or not they're reporting the truth or not? No, they just want to make money to keep the lights on. I'm interested in your views. Some of you will probably be new to the channel because you will have found the keyword of this episode. And you probably have extensive science backgrounds. I implore you to do your research if you think that this is predominantly untrue, what I have said in this episode. If you're going to try to write Einstein a blank check, I just say be very creative about it. Because he's the only guy, other than Bill Nye the douchebag guy, who will repeat things as if he's actually invented them and take 100% credit for them. At least Neil deGrasse Tyson, love him or hate him or whatever, he cites his resources. He cites the other scientists, and he will cite Einstein a lot. But he's just drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago, and he gets a big fat paycheck for doing it. So again, a big fat paycheck is a very interesting thing because it is money is the way that we're all absolutely constrained on this planet from doing what we really want to do with life. And so when you have any technique to get a lot of it, it's really tough for the flawed Homo sapien to resist such an opportunity. You have to know that, you know, I watch channels all the time that talk about Q, that talk about all, you know, geez, if I just were to move to China and get a dog and cut down bamboo and make furniture and cook food, I could probably have 2 million views on every one of my videos and live large. You know, there's all kinds of ways to make these super sellout channels, which I don't have anything against a lot of them. You know, taking other people's material and publishing it in my video as if it's mine. You could make little Goo Goo Gaga kitten videos and make a ton of cash. But there at one point becomes this, who are you? What is important to you? Is integrity important to you? Is it okay just to look the other way when evil is just proliferating this planet? I side on the side of no. You must have skin in the game. It's super easy to sell out when you have half a brain. My guiding principle for life is this, especially for those who are watching my motives. I do believe at one point I will meet a central consciousness upon leaving this mortal coil. And I want that moment, which will be definitely admitting plenty of mistakes in my life that I probably had the intelligence to avoid. But I want that to have the highest level of integrity, that at least when I meet my creator, I say, look, yeah, I did all those things. Here's a big list. If admission is any level, if admission grants any level of leniency, I'm here to state my entire life history where I think I made my mistakes. And I won't even give excuses. God knows. For the man that lives for money and who's an atheist and doesn't believe there's anything after this world, there's no thought like that. And I believe Einstein was a devout atheist. What I find interesting is, and this is probably going to draw some controversy, but let's leave that for the last episode, which is this episode of season 4. It would seem that those that we would put on a list of having routinely violated common law their entire life are atheists. And it's just like those preachers in my old church that said, it's not important that Jesus Christ ever really existed as a man on earth. It's important that man believe in Jesus Christ because he imbues in man a method of living your life such that you're a good person. It's really hard to argue with that rationale. And so if I, when I do my episodes where I talk about my personal lack of belief that he existed, I'm always following that up with that value statement, which is to say, but I think that primarily, I don't know what the percentage is, it's a high 90 percentile rating of everything Christ said was the stuff that we need to take to heart and follow because it was the previous like-minded religions before him that had virgin births and same exact story as his story that have been trying for millennia to get man to see the fruits of behaving, of being patient and being tolerant. Doesn't mean you can give away everything you own to illegal people moving into your country, trust me. Everyone needs a mother of invention to fix what is wrong in their world, and escaping your world should be only something that happens in an absolute dire situation. But I think that it should only happen as subsequent to trying to fix your world. As of 2019, the movement to rebirth science into its true form, meaning what we know and what we don't know, who discovered what, when, and who do we give credit to, it's a tiny, tiny pool of individuals online who seem to care about this sort of thing. It is my absolute hope that in my lifetime, that I will see the rebirth of science from a capital S to a lowercase s, from a religion back down to sort of a paradigm of thinking. The scientific method and scientific process, especially of the scientific standards to publish one's paper, mandates what Einstein never afforded any of his predecessors, which is credit for what they came up with. And the problem of cutting off a source from being discovered by Einstein not giving credit to the individuals he stole most of his content from is that perhaps those individuals themselves went way further than the point at which their material was stolen. So I don't personally have a giant deep understanding of, let's say, Lorentz. But let's just say that Lorentz lived, another 30 years after having his material stolen. Perhaps in that 30 years after his material was stolen, he was able to have epiphany after epiphany because he was a true inventor and he got to a better place in science, which was completely ignored and marginalized because the focus was on a guy that took a snapshot, maybe even misinterpreted certain things, and got us off on the wrong track. I've been a creative person my entire life, and when you're a creative person, you will have, it could be a technical creative thing, I've invented some technology, or I've invented some music or what have you, a melody, and people will say from time to time, well, what if someone steals that? And my reply from my mid-20s has always been, well, they can only steal. I get to create more and more and more. I don't worry about it. Imagine an artist like Freddie Mercury or Prince or someone who's really self-contained in their amazingness, and you go up to them and say, well, what if someone stole 1999, the song, or they stole, hopefully not Bohemian Rhapsody, but maybe Killer Queen or something, like a really landmark song for some of these individuals to launch their careers. I'm willing to bet that deep down inside, you're not happy about it, but they'd probably just go, well, that's all right. Eventually, that other person will get outed because they will be a one-hit wonder unless they steal from someone else, and then we'll have multiple people saying this person steals. Eventually, they'll be outed. Eventually, the credit will come back to the creator. But they'll go on and, you know, the people that were stolen from, the creative people, will continue forever, creating until the day they die. It's what they do. It's what they're made out of, and it's what their purpose is in life, a.k.a. their love for life. I think you feel me. Finally got this episode out the door. This is the final episode of season 4. There will be a follow-up episode, which is already recorded, that will release strictly for the Facebook group. And then maybe deep into season 5, we'll release that to the world like we did the other one. If you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. That's where you can find all the feeds from audio to video. You can find a couple different social media outlets, Facebook and Twitter. On the Facebook page, it is locked, so as you apply, I ask you a question, say something human. You don't need to say anything, anything super intelligible. Just say something human. There's also two ways to donate to the page, Patreon for a monthly fee, PayPal for a single donation. If you do subscribe to Patreon, you will get the feeds before everyone else. At the time of this video, again, there'll be one after this for the Facebook folks. And then I'm going to take about a month and a half off as I re-churn what will be season 5. There's also a link up there to the new remastered season 1. It will only ever have season 1 episodes in it. For those of you who are brand new to the show, the reason why is that the season 1 for the previous, on this particular channel, you might be watching this episode on, they're just brutal. They're just volumes all off and messed up, and my mouth on the mic is horrible, so I tried to fix a lot of that stuff, plus a lot of idiosyncrasies with the way I was talking. It's a little faster to watch, let's just put it that way. So anyway, for all of you who have stuck with the show forever, I super duper appreciate it. Please subscribe. If this stuff appeals to you, just know you've got years of content to get through. As of this stage, the show has almost reached 36 years of continuous listening. So I super appreciate everyone who makes that statistic possible. Hopefully we just keep going up and up. Anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next season of Deep Thoughts Radio. Over now.